So we're holding on page 10. Ten lines from the bottom where it says, Arbir Inyan. I mean, we did this already last week, but we're going to just go back a line and a half or so. Arbir Inyan. The understanding of everything. Alpi Mashakasa Reb Chaim Vital is based on that which Reb Chaim Vital said. Zechayim Levracha B'Shar HaKadusha B'Eitz Chaim Sharnun Perik Beis. Reb Chaim Vital states the whole Yisrael, that every single Yid, Echad Tzadik V'Echad Rasha, Yeshtei Neshamas. Every single Yid, whether a person is a Tzadik or whether a person is a Rasha, has two Neshamas. And these two Neshamas, as we're going to learn today, one is called the Nefesh HaBahamis, which literally translates as the animal soul, although that's a very misleading translation, as we'll get to, because the insinuation of the words animal soul are not exactly correct. But one neshama is called the nefesh habahamis, and the other neshama is called the nefesh alikis, which means the godly soul. And Reb Chaim Vital says, every single yid has both of them, both a tzaddik and a rasha, which is interesting. Because if you remember last week, we already learned that a tzaddik doesn't have a yetzer hara. Remember, we learned that. But he still has an nefesh habahamis for some reason, which goes to show you how there's a difference over here. A tzaddik does not have a yetzer hara, but he does have an nefesh habahamis. And every yid has an nefesh habahamis, even a tzaddik. And every yid has an nefesh alikis, a godly soul, even the biggest rasha. And what does Reb Chaim Vital brings a proof from a pasuk? Diksiv, as it says in the pasuk, "Uneshama isani asisi." It's a pasuk, I believe it's in Yeshaya, but I may be wrong about that, where it says, "Veruach melefana yatoif." Hashem says that from me goes out a spirit, "Uneshama isani asisi," and I created neshamas. So literally, "Uneshama isani asisi" is a reference to the many neshamas, which every single person has their own individual neshama. But Reb Chaim Vital understood neshamis ani asisi to mean that every single person has neshamis. Every single person has two neshamas.
Abraham Avinu also said neshamot,
or
the neshamot that he met, Abraham Avinu.
V'sanefesh asher asu b'charan.
That's it.
Right. Shtei nefashis. Shehen shtei nefashis. So these two, the two neshamas means that we have two different animating spirits. The first one we're going to discuss is going to be the Nefesh HaBahamis. And then we're going to discuss the Nefesh HaLakis. Later, at some point later on, we're going to have to figure out what that order would seem a little... First you should discuss the Nefesh HaLakis, the godly soul, but there's a reason. And the first soul, the first neshama is called the Nefesh HaBahamis. So Nefesh Achas, the first Nefesh, is Mitzad HaKlipa V'Sitra Achra. It comes from Klipa and Sitra Achra. Klipa and Sitra Achra are two terms that are used in Kabbalah to describe the forces of impurity. Klipa and Sitra Achra, they're both the same thing. They're just describing two different elements of it. The word Klipa means
a shell.
Or a peel.
A husk.
And why is Klipa called a shell? Why is it called a husk?
Because
it surrounds Kedusha. Well, what does that mean? That means like this. That means that everything that Hashem created in this world, we have a rule, an axiom. Kol ma shabara kadosh baruch hu be'elamai. Everything that Hashem created in the world was created to serve the Eibishter. Le'baroi ela l'chvaydei. Everything the Eibishter created, there's no mistakes in Hashem's world. Everything that's here is created, was created by Hashem, and is constantly recreated by Hashem at every single moment. And if Hashem is creating something, that means it's there for a divine purpose, and it's to bring honor and glory to Hashem. That is the essence of everything. In other words, that's the reason why the neshama of every single object is its objective, it's its divine objective, it's the reason why Hashem created it. When we say that something is holy, what does that mean? When something is holy, that means that it is transparent to its neshama. The reason why Hashem created it, when you look at it, you know why Hashem created it. For example, a sefer is holy. Why is a sefer holy? Because when someone asks you, why was this paper and this ink, why was it created? What purpose does it serve? What's the immediate answer? It's here to express Hashem's words. It's here in this world to serve Hashem and to bring glory to Hashem. That's why it's holy. How about this cup of water or a seltzer? When you look at the cup, what does it say to you? Who are you? I'm a cup. I'm seltzer. Hashem, you don't see Hashem. Why was this created? To serve Hashem. But there is a husk, there's a shell covering it up. We don't see that. Now, as we'll learn later on in Tanya, when I make a bracha on this and I drink it in order to serve Hashem, I'm ripping off the shell and everyone looks at it and sees, why was this created? In order to bench Hashem and to serve Hashem and to give me energy when I'm serving Hashem. So klipa means everything in this world, there, without exception, everything that Hashem created was there to serve Him. However, in some things, there's a klipa. You look at it, and it doesn't tell you that. It's not obvious. It's not apparent. Its divine purpose isn't clear. Which is very interesting, gives you interesting insight. You realize, you know, we think klipa is so scary. But klipa isn't real. Klipa is a lie. It has no substance. It has no reality. Klipa is a lie. Klipa is something which is really holy, and it's covering up on that holiness. Klipa doesn't have an existence of its own. In other words, there's no object which is, you could say, really bad. All you can say is it has a very big klipa, which means that its purpose in this world is very, very hidden. But at the core of everything is Kedusha. At the core of everything is the reason why Hashem created it, is the neshama. A klipa makes not apparent. So the first nefesh that we have, the first soul that every single yid has, is the nefesh HaBahamas, and it comes from klipa, which means that when you look at the nefesh HaBahamas, you don't see its divine purpose. It's about ego, as we'll find out soon, and self-centeredness. Another name which klipa has, as we're seeing over here, is Sitra Achra. Sitra Achra is Aramaic for the other side, which is very informative of what klipa is also. Because many people think that klipa means is synonymous with evil. But is this cup of seltzer evil? But it's klipa. Why is it klipa? Sitra Achra means anything which isn't Kedusha is automatically klipa. It's the other side. It's the other side of Kedusha. It doesn't have to be necessarily evil, as we're soon going to continue and sing. Sitra Achra means something isn't Kedusha. And what is Kedusha? What is the definition of Kedusha? Something which is batal to Hashem. Something which is subservient to Hashem and doing what Hashem wants and is there and expresses its divine purpose. That's Kedusha. Anything else is Sitra Achra. So the first information we know about the Nefesh HaBahamas is that it's Klipa and Sitra Achra. Meaning it doesn't express, it doesn't openly express Hashem. Further inside, it is this soul that enters the blood of the person and animates the body. And it says in the pasuk, "Ki nefesh habasar bedami." U'mimena bois kol hamidos rois, and all the midos rois that a yid has comes from the nefesh habahamas. And I want to do inside quickly, and then we're going to talk more outside, more in depth. All the bad midas, all the bad character traits that we have, all come from the Nefesh HaBahamas. Now we know that physically speaking, everything in this world is comprised of four elements. Esh, Ruach, Mayim, and Afar. Fire, and wind, and water, and earth. Now, today we know that according to the scientists, there are many more elements than four. I think maybe someone here knows better than me. What is it, 70 elements, 70-something elements? So what exactly that means? Okay, so people talk about it, exactly what it means. What are the four elements? But as I state, says that everything is comprised of these four things. So obviously, when a Yiddishkeit talks about elements, it means something different than when science is referring to something different. But it's not the point of today's conversation. But we also know that everything in the physical world is a reflection of a spiritual reality. This world is the end of a long chain of spiritual, what we call worlds, and everything that's in this world is a mirror and a reflection of something which is higher in the spiritual realms. So just like the physical is comprised of four elements, the spiritual also is comprised of four elements. The only thing is that obviously those are spiritual elements. So the Nefesh HaBahamis also is comprised of four spiritual elements, and they are fire, water, earth, and wind. And all the Midos Reis, all the bad character traits that we have, they come from the four different elements of the Nefesh HaBahamis, which we're going to learn about right now. So again, Umimena Boyis Kol HaMidos Reis, from the Nefesh HaBahamis comes all a person's bad Midos. Ma'arba Yisoydes Roim Shaba, from the four evil elements of the Nefesh HaBahamis. Dahainu, which means Kas Vegaiva Miyasoida Esh Shenigba Lamaila. Anger and arrogance, they come from the spiritual element of fire. Because just like fire is constantly moving upwards, so arrogance comes from fire. It also, it's constantly, you know, arrogance is the person trying to act in a superior way. And the relationship between anger and fire, I don't think we need to elaborate on that too much. V'taivas hatanugim, pleasure, our craving and our desire for pleasure, that comes miyisoid hamayim, that comes from the element of water, which is in the Nefesh HaBahamis. Ki hamayim atzmichim kol minei tainug, because everything that's pleasurable comes from water. Water, everything that's pleasurable grows through water, and also even physically, you know, when someone doesn't have any pleasure in life, we call that person a dry person. Which right away, that gives you an association between water and pleasure.
The Torah is water also. So you learn Torah, you have tanuk.
That's also true. V'hoilulus ulitsanus v'hispirus advarim b'telem. Okay, we have four things. Hoilulus means Wildkeit, how do you say that in English? Heulus means
getting hot.
Rowdiness. Okay, and some other synonyms for that. Ulitzanus, which means mockery. Vispirus, boastfulness. Udvarim betelem, and stam, wasting time and speaking nothing. Those are all Miseid HaRuach. They come from the wind element in Nefesh HaBahamis, because all of these have no substance to it whatsoever. They're all wind. The atzlus va'atzvus miyisoid ha'ofar. Laziness and depression come from the element, the spiritual element of earth, which again, that doesn't need too much elaboration on why and the connection. It's heavy. Earth is the heaviest element, and laziness and depression also are associated with spiritual heaviness. And here we're going to learn something fascinating. Vigam midos toivos shebetava kol Yisrael betoldeisam. How about the good midos? We know the Gemara says in Yevamos that every single Yid has wonderful character traits. Yidin by nature are achmanim, they're merciful, they're goimli chasadim, they're kind people. And in fact, we know, the Gemara talks about it, that there is a class of people, or is a ethnic group called the Givinim, and they refused to forgive the sons of Shaul HaMelech. It's a whole story in the Nach, which we don't have to go into right now. And at that time, David said, Yidden are not allowed to marry to Givinim. Not allowed to get married, because if they refuse to forgive, if they don't have the trait of mercy and kindness, we don't want that gene pool to mix with the Yidden. Because Yidden, by nature, well, they were Jewish, yeah. In other words, they were Gerim. They were converts. they tricked Yeshua, and he accepted them as converts, but they exhibited an incredible cruelty to Shaul's sons. And David says that's, you know, that's not, it's not the Jewish way. It's not the Jewish way. So the midos toivos, the wonderful, beautiful midos that Yidden have, and we all know that. We all know that Yidden are by nature kind. You know, we're biased, so maybe it's difficult for us to give an objective opinion on whether we're kinder. And the Yidden are naturally kinder than everyone else. But actually, if you look at the numbers, if you look at the numbers of philanthropists and how much money Yidden give to tzedakah, not even from a Yidden, just Yidden, it's well above what anyone else gives. I mean,
percentage-wise.
Right, obviously, but not only percentage-wise. In other words, the top givers in the United States, the top, I looked into this recently, the five out of the top six biggest philanthropists in the United States are Jewish. So it's not only, you know, when you're comparing numbers per capita, etc., but also it's actually the,
absolute,
it's very, very lopsided, the numbers. And that's because Yidden by nature are Rachmanim Agayim L'Chassadim. Now, where do these beautiful, wonderful, kind traits come from? Says the Alter Rebbe, surprisingly so, they don't come from the Nefesh Elokis, they come from the Nefesh HaBahamas. V'gam midos toivos shebetava kol Yisrael b'tildosam, and also the wonderful positive midos that all Yidden have by nature from their birth, k'moy, for example, Rachmanus u'gmilos chasadim, mercy and kindness, boys mimena, they also come from the Nefesh HaBahamas. Ki b'Yisrael, because by Yidden, nefesh zu di klipa, this Nefesh HaBahamas, although it is klipa, he meklipas noiga, it's from a type of klipa called klipas noiga. The word noiga means light, which we're going to get into in a second, or soon what that means. Sheyesh b'gam kein toiv, therefore it also has positive traits to it. V'hi mesoyed eitz hadas toivara, this is the mystical meaning behind eitz hadas, which is a combination of good and bad. The nefesh HaBahamas of a Yid also has good and bad within it. What is the Nefesh HaBahamas? Let's get to the core of what this is. The Nefesh HaBahamas is the natural human soul. And although it's called the animal soul, there's no question that the natural human soul, which is the Nefesh HaBahamas, has very little in common with the soul of an animal. So why is it called the Nefesh HaBahamas in that case? Because it shares a certain quality with animals. And that is, an animal, what is it interested in?
Self.
First and foremost and only is self. Self-preservation and pleasure and all the others, every other self hyphenated you can add in. And it's bound by its nature, and it thinks about itself. Is that evil?
Some animals are.
Such as?
Dogs.
Dogs.
They think about their master.
Okay. You're saying this from experience?
Well, no, there are dogs that give their lives to save, that go against their nature, their instinct for self-preservation in order to save their master.
Okay, I hear that. I can't make an argument for every single instance and what something can be trained to do, which is against its nature, obviously. But I would argue that it's also consistent with its nature for whatever reason. It has a nature, and that's its nature which it was given, which makes it happy. And it follows that nature. And if there wasn't some underlying reason making it happy, it wouldn't be doing it. The concept of self-sacrifice doesn't apply to an animal, of giving it, because ultimately they're all stuck within themselves. And to be very clear, that doesn't make them evil. It doesn't make them bad. I mean, they're animals, that's obvious. But rule of nature number one in all of creation is that survival of the fittest. Everything looks out for its own self. That everything is interested in its own self-preservation and its own pleasure and its own perpetuation, etc. And that's normal. And the human being, the first soul that we have, which is this animal soul, which shares this quality, is it's a natural soul. It's looking to make itself happy. It's looking to express its nature. And its nature has both good and bad. The Nefesh HaBahamas of a Yid, it's an interesting creature. It has, again, because it comes from the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra, so it has both good components and bad components in it. So on the one hand, it has a propensity to be lazy, as we all know. That's a propensity to be sad sometimes. Sometimes it makes jokes and sometimes it gets angry. It's all part of its nature. And part of his nature is that it likes to give tzedakah also. And that's all natural. And it's all doing it because this is what it wants to do and this is what it feels good for itself. So it feels good to be angry sometimes, as we all know. When someone gets us very upset, you know, and we get angry, so that feels it feels good for us. We take pleasure in that in a perverse way. Depression feels good. As strange as that sounds, but it's true, you know. We all, who doesn't enjoy a good cry? And all the other midos rois, you don't enjoy a good cry?
No.
Can't relate it? Okay. Okay, so your nefesh HaBahamas is different. Not every single person has every single one of these midos that we're talking about, but across the human spectrum, there are many people who enjoy a good cry. Trust me. And then there's kas and gaiva, and there's pleasures. And there's boastfulness, and there's, you know, making jokes, and dvarim b'teilim. These are all expressions of the nature of the Nefesh HaBahamas. It likes all these things. It enjoys them. Nefesh HaBahamas also likes doing nice things. It's merciful. It's all part of its nature. So the Nefesh HaBahamas, to put it in somewhat different words, is the natural soul that we have. It's the natural soul that we have that chases whatever it wants to chase. Good or bad, it has both, it's a mixture. And the reason why is because, as the Alter Rebbe says over here, that the Nefesh HaBahamas of a Yid comes from Klipas Noga. Klipas Noga is, it is Klipa, but the Noga is an Aramaic, means light. There's also a light there. And that means, as we'll, that it has two different meanings, Klipas Noga. As we'll find out as we continue through the Prakim, one idea on Klipas Noga is that even though there is a Klipa, there's a shell, we can reveal the light within it, the Kedusha within it. And the other is also that even when the shell is there, there's still the light somehow or other shines out a little through the shell. So since the Nefesh HaBahamas of a Yid is Klipas Noga, so therefore, not only does it have negative traits, but it also has positive traits. And the Alter Rebbe is going to contrast this with the Nefesh HaBahamas of a Goy. The Nefesh HaBahamas of a Yid and the Nefesh HaBahamas of a non-Jew are not the same. Because the Nefesh HaBahamas of a non-Jew, as the Alter Rebbe is going to tell us, comes from Gimel Klipas HaTmeis. Gimel Klipas HaTmeis is a different, there is a different category within Klipa. There are two, there in general, there are two categories of Klipa. There's Klipas Noga, which we just described. There is Gimel Klipas HaTmeis, and the Nefesh HaBahamas of a non-Jew comes from Gimel Klipas HaTmeis. Later on, we're going to, in Tanya, within the next few chapters, we're going to divide, you'll see the entire world into three categories. There's Kedusha, and then there's Klipa, and within Klipa, there's Klipas Noga, and Gimel Klipas HaTmeis. But right now, we're just talking about within human beings. Gimel Klipas HaTmeis means there's no good. There's no olukos. No goodness. The light, the godliness within it is pretty much completely concealed.
But there's some goyim that are doing good.
We have some goyim that are doing good. Okay, so let's look inside. Mashenki nafshes umis ha'olam. As opposed to the nefashis, the souls of goyim, hein meshar klipas meis, those come from other klipas, she'ein behen toiv klal, there is no good in them. K'meshe kasa be'etz chayim, shar mem tes, peyre gimel, as it says in Etz Chayim, it says over there, v'chol tivu da'avdin ha'umais, all good that goyim do, l'germayu avdin, they do it for themselves, for their own sake. Ukadisa b'gemara, as the Gemara says, al pasuk v'chesed l'umim chatas, there's a pasuk that says, even the chesed that goyim do is also a chatas, is a sin. The Gemara says, shakol chesed, shakol tztaka v'chesed, all charity and chesed, sha'umais ha'olam oisin, that the nations of the world do, enon el lishyar chulu, is only because it makes them feel good, it gives them a high, makes them arrogant or prideful. Yeah.
Isn't that what the Nefesh Bahamas is? That it serves itself?
Okay.
So then the Baal Tanya's explanation how it's different for Goyim doesn't fit, because if the whole Nefesh Bahamas is that whether it's good or bad, it's, you know, that you seek pleasure to do good or you seek pleasure to do other things, then the way you laid it out, the definition, how is that different for goyim?
So you're asking, how would it, in other words, the definition for the Nefesh Bahamas of a Yid and for a goy doesn't seem to be too different, because both of them do good things, and both of them do it to make them feel themselves good, to make them feel good. Good point. We're going to get that in a moment. So just a few side points over here to mention. Number one, in other places in Chassidus it's mentioned that although this is the rule, that goyim in general, their Nefesh Bahamas comes from Gimel Klipas HaTmeis, there are exceptions, and the exceptions are called what are known as Chassidi Umas HaOlam, the Chassidim, the pious of the world, and they, by them, their Nefesh Bahamas is also from Klipas Nega. That's number one. Number two, there's a Mesaira by Chassidim, the story it's brought on, that when Dr. Rebbe, we know Dr. Rebbe was imprisoned. There was a libel against him, trumped up charges, and he was put in prison, and he was subject to interrogation, and they asked him many, many questions about his philosophy. And every single question, Dr. Rebbe answered, and he answered convincingly and well to his interrogators, who were non-Jews. The last question that they posed to Dr. Rebbe was, you write in the last perek, in the end of the first chapter of Tanya, that goyim have no good in them, it's all Nefesh Bahamas, it's Gimel Klipas HaTmeis. What do you have to say about that? Dr. Rebbe didn't respond, he just smiled. And they didn't press him any further, they let him go. And the way it's explained is like Dr. Rebbe was saying, listen, you just asked me a bunch of questions. I answered them all very well and very convincingly. I could answer this one also well and convincingly. Do you really want me to? So he smiled and they got it and they left him alone. The non-Jewish interrogators, what do you mean? This is xenophobia, centrism, it's racism, it's against goyim. What are you saying? So Dr. Rebbe didn't answer. In other words, he said, I'd rather not offend you. I could answer, I could make my case, but I'd rather not. And they understood the implicit, the tacit answer that Dr. Rebbe was giving, and they let him go. But what does this all mean? It means to say as follows. The Nefesh HaBahamas, as mentioned earlier, is natural. It's not about serving Hashem. And as we'll see soon, that is going to be the difference between the Nefesh HaBahamas and Nefesh HaLikis. And we also touched upon this last week. Nefesh HaBahamas is about what I want and what feels good to me. Nefesh HaLikis is about complete and utter bittul to Hashem. The midos toivos of the Nefesh HaLikis are very different than the midos toivos of the Nefesh HaBahamas. The good qualities of the Nefesh HaLikis, which it also has, very different. Nefesh HaBahamas is about I'm doing it. Why? Because I enjoy doing chesed. Nefesh HaLikis is not doing chesed because it enjoys doing chesed, but because that's what Hashem wants. The definition of Nefesh HaLikis is bittul to Hashem. Why? Because that's kedusha. When I do kindness because I want to, it's still klipa. You don't see Hashem over there. The definition of klipa, as mentioned earlier, is that you look at something. This is what Hashem did in a masterful way, which is unbelievable. Which Dr. Rebbe in Shaykh Lumina says this is one of the biggest, called the mysteries of the world, or the greatest things that Hashem did. He says, you know, that Hashem has midas hachesed and midas hagvura. Hashem's midas hachesed is unlimited. His midas hachesed created everything, and we can't begin to fathom how Hashem created this world and all the worlds from utter nothingness. And then Hashem used the Midas HaGvura to hide himself within everything. Put a klipa on everything. So Hashem is within every single thing, and everything is really about Hashem, and you look around the world, and He's there in every single thing and nook and cranny and every single molecule, and He managed to hide Himself utterly and completely. Aside for, again, in Kedusha, things which are holy, the Nefesh HaLikis expresses Hashem. The Nefesh HaBahamas is an expression of ego. Even when it does good, it's an expression of ego. And when I'm using the word ego here, I don't mean that in a negative sense. I don't mean that like, you know, we're talking about a haughty, egotistical, arrogant, condescending person. Ego me, I'm talking about an expression of self. However, what's the difference between the Nefesh HaBahamas of a Yid and the Nefesh HaBahamas of a Goy? The Nefesh HaBahamas of a Yid enjoys doing good, enjoys doing a favor. It enjoys giving tzedakah. The Nefesh HaBahamas of a Goy doesn't enjoy giving tzedakah. It enjoys the plaque on the wall that it gets afterwards. So a Goyim will do a lot of good things because they want to get respect and they want to get prestige. And maybe even because they want to feel good about themselves. But they don't enjoy doing the act of goodness itself. They enjoy the result of it. And that's what it means. V'chesed lo'umim chatas. That means that when a Goy does something good, there is an ulterior motive over there. As opposed to a Yid, we're not talking about the Nefesh HaLikis over here. We're talking about the Nefesh HaBahamas. The natural Yid, not the godly element of the Yid. Even the Yid who doesn't access that godly element, the natural Yid enjoys doing a favor without any ulterior motive. That itself is what the Yid wants to do. Yes?
Would the Rebbe, the Baal Tanya, I should say, talk about when a Ger gets the Nefesh HaLikis? Is it during his preparation or once he's a Goy?
So you're asking about a Ger. When does a Ger get his Nefesh HaLikis?
Is it once he's tovo in the mikvah or during the chinuch become a Jew?
So in Chassidus actually it's explained. There's a term, whenever in Halacha when it talks about a Ger, it says very often Ger Shenes Geyer, which means a convert that converts. Yeah. Which is kind of funny. What should it say? Goy Shenes Geyer, a non-Jew converts. What's Ger Shenes Geyer, a convert that converts? So in Chassidus it's explained that someone who ends up converting, someone who ends up being this Geyer, that means they always had a Yiddish Neshama. But the Yiddish Neshama was extremely, extremely, this Nefesh HaLikis, and presumably also the higher level of Nefesh HaBahamas, was hidden. And when the actual conversion process happens, that's when it becomes revealed. So let's be very clear about this. When a non-Jew is converting tomorrow, he can't be counted for a minyan, even if you're absolutely certain that he's converting tomorrow, because at the moment the Nefesh HaLikis is completely inaccessible. But the moment of conversion, that's when it happens. So what do we have over here? You know, I'm sitting over here, middle of Flatbush over here. No one's raising too many objections to what we're talking about over here. But this is a Perek, which I'll tell you, now we have the Kinnas HaShluchim that's happening in Crown Heights. And Shluchim don't like teaching this chapter of Tanya, because this goes over very, very difficult with many of the students. This idea that the difference between Yidden and Goyim, and the wording that Alter Rebbe used doesn't sound so complimentary towards Goyim. But in reality, this is not about Goy hatred. This is really about lifting the Yid up on a pedestal rather than putting down the Goy. Because the description of a goy over here, you'd go to any psychologist or you'd go to any person who studies, you know, the human nature, they would say, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Why do people enjoy doing good? Do they enjoy the actual doing good or do they enjoy the result of it? If the person is ultimately a selfish being, which is widely accepted around, you know, in the world, that ultimately we're selfish beings, so if I'm doing something good for someone else, there has to be a catch over here. The catch can even be that it makes me feel good about myself. Lihis yair, right? It makes me feel righteous. It makes me feel meaningful. But then I'm not really taking pleasure in the act of kindness. I'm taking pleasure in how it makes me feel afterwards. Now, that seems to be a pretty accurate description of the human condition. We're not saying that goyim don't do good things. Tanya doesn't say that. They do good things. They give tzedakah. They can. But they're not taking pleasure in the act. They're taking pleasure in the result of the act.
They don't do it lishma.
Correct. No. Whereas the Yid, the Nefesh Bahamas, the Yid also is not doing it lishma. It's not about lishma or not. But the Nefesh Bahamas of the Yid is not worried about the result. The Nefesh Bahamas of the Yid enjoys giving tzedakah. That is its pleasure. Not because of anything that'll follow. Not because it'll make it feel good afterwards and feel righteous. Not because it's going to get a plaque on the wall or because it's going to be acknowledged. I mean, all those things are nice. We enjoy them also. But a Yid also naturally takes pleasure, pashat, in giving tzedakah and being kind and being merciful. And to the contrary, when a Yid isn't kind and when a Yid isn't merciful, it bothers the Yid because it's against our nature. It's against our nature. Yeah.
This idea is in the Zohar, the distinction between the Jew and the Goy.
Eitz Chaim, yeah, not the Zohar, the Eitz Chaim, the writings of the Arizal.
Been giving
Makara
sometimes. He didn't give a
Makar
for this.
He sure does. Eitz Chaim, Sharmem Tes Gimel. That's the source in the Eitz Chaim for this concept. And incidentally, this is what's the connection to this week's Parsha with this concept that we're talking about? Can anyone think?
The act of chesed of buying the field.
Okay.
You know, that is the true act of chesed.
Chesed shel emes, in the beginning of this week's parsha, buying the field. Okay. And then there's a story of Avram sends Eliezer to go get Rivka. Why? What's wrong with the women in Canaan? So they're idolaters. And Lavan and Bisuel aren't. Avram says, go to my family. Bah, my family. You know, you think he's sown to Yichus. Aram's family, Lavan and Besuel and Nachar, these were all idol worshippers also. They're all pagans. So what's the advantage of going to Padan Aram and getting for Yitzhak a wife over there? So the Mefarshim addressed this, and the Mefarshim explained that there's two things. There is what a person does, and a person can be taught to do the wrong thing. A person can be taught to believe the wrong thing. But then there is the midas, the natural midas that a person has. And that's genetic. Avram says, I come from good stock. We're good people. We're good people. Over here, it's not just that they're... And here, the people, even if they're not Oyev Dezarek, because we know Avram Avinu made a lot of Gerim, a lot of Banyan Honor, Eshkel and Mamre, they don't have the same midas toivis. They don't have the same wonderful midas as my family has. That's the Yiddish midas toivis, the Yiddish nature, and that's what Avram was looking for. And Eliezer, not only wanted to make sure that the girl that he's getting Taka exhibits these midas. So he didn't. You know, you ask. He could have gone to. Could have gone to.
If a goy becomes a ger. Does he automatically develop those midas that a person who's born in Judaism?
Apparently so. You're saying that if a non-Jew becomes a ger, does he develop those midas? In other words, from the Nefesh Bahamas, it's obvious that when a non-Jew becomes a Yid, see, this is a big chiddush here, right? Because we all think that when a non-Jew becomes a Yid, they get a Yiddish neshama, which is true. But based on what Al-Dreb is saying over here, there's another chiddush. You have to also get a Jewish Nefesh Bahamas. It's not enough to get a Jewish Nefesh Alikis. which, by the way, goyim don't have a nefesh l'kis sedom. Goyim have a nefesh abahamas. That's their one soul. A yid also has nefesh l'kis.
You said he had it inherent, but it wasn't revealed. And when he comes Megayer, then his Jewish neshama, which he had concealed, becomes revealed.
Right. So apparently, well, so you're saying, there's also another nekuda. If you remember, I said earlier that it's brought down in Tais Chassidus that Chassidei Umas HaElam, also their Nefesh HaBahamis is also Klipas Naiga, which means to say that there are Goyim out there. And I would venture to say that as we get closer and closer to Mashiach, that's more and more Goyim. More and more Goyim are Chassidei Umas HaElam. That their Nefesh HaBahamis is also from Klipas Naiga, which means that they also take pleasure in actually in doing good. So maybe, to go back, is it possible that maybe someone who was destined to be a Ger, they're also Chassidei Umas HaElam, and therefore their Nefesh HaBahamis would be Klipas Naiga. And if that would be the case, then the Nefesh HaBahamis can remain the same, and when they become a Ger, all that's needed to be added is a Nefesh HaLikis.
So you're saying some Goyim had this Nefesh HaLikis?
No.
Are you referring
to... I didn't say that. I didn't say that there's some goyim that have nefesh l'kis. I said there are some goyim whose nefesh bahamis is of klipas noiga, and therefore that's parallel to what Yidin are.
Would that be like someone who's b'nei Noah? You're talking about such a person?
The words used is chassidei umas ha'elam, the pious of the goyim. And as we know, for example, during the Holocaust, there are various goyim who...
Schindler.
My grandfather was on Schindler's List, my mother's father. Yeah. So, yeah.
So that's why when the fifth Mashiach knocks on your door an hour, all Jews are all smiles.
The Nefesh HaBahamis, as we mentioned, it has Midas Toivais and Midas Rais. It has both. It's in a mixture. So that's why when the first Mashiach comes, your Nefesh HaBahamis is smiling and happy to give. And when the fifth one comes, it's not so happy. The Nefesh HaLakis is always happy to give. So Avram goes to Padan Aram, as mentioned, this week's Parsha. Not Avram, Eliezer. And he wants to find this girl who's going to have tremendous Midas Toivis. And he makes this test. See, you'd go and find the phone book and look up, Besuil Nacher, you sent, knock on the door and say... He wanted to make sure. He wanted to make sure that it was Midas. Because this is something which is important by Yidin. Not only the Nefesh HaLakis is important by Yid. It's not only important that we should have Bittul, but that also the nature of a Yid, even before the Nefesh HaLakis enters the conversation, there is good in it also. There's bad also. Let's remember that. There's also the bad. Let's not forget the anger and the depression and the boastfulness and the arrogance and all that. That's also from the Nefesh HaBahamis. But the Nefesh HaBahamis of a Jew is a mixture. It's a toy vara. It's a mixture of both good and bad. And the good in it is pure good. It enjoys the good. And then we're going to find out, and Perek Beis, which we're going to start in a moment, that there's the Nefesh HaLakis, there's the godly soul. And the godly soul is something else altogether. The godly soul is all about Hashem. So it turns out, there are three levels in goodness. There's the goodness of the goy. There's the goodness of the Nefesh HaBahamis of the Yid, and there's the goodness of the Nefesh HaLakis of the Yid. And they're all different. The goodness of the Goy is not pure, meaning that there's an ulterior motive, for the most part, aside from Chassidei Umas HaElam, there's an ulterior motive over there. And by the way, as we all, if every Goy would live up to this potential, and they'd all be giving good because of the ulterior motives. When we say ulterior motives, what are we talking about? Some recognition, feeling good. That's great. That would be beautiful. Can you imagine a world where all going, we're giving stuck on doing good because they wanted to get a little recognition? That would be a wonderful world to live in. So again, this is not putting goyim down. It's really keeping goyim on a very normal level, which is they do good, but as naturally selfish beings, they want something in return. Because if there's nothing in return, why am I doing good if I'm a naturally selfish being? Then there's the Nefesh HaBahamis of a Yid. The Nefesh HaBahamis of a Yid does good for good's sake. Meaning, it wants to do good. That's part of its nature. But ultimately, it's still Klipa. Even though it's good, it's still Klipas Noga. Why? Because we don't see Hashem there. And as we mentioned earlier, what is Klipa Sitra Achra? If Hashem isn't seen over there, then it's Sitra Achra. It's the other side. It's not bad. That's the fascinating thing over here. It's not bad. It's good. But it's Sitra Achra. It's the other side. It's not Kedusha. Because what's the definition of Kedusha? Something which is transparent to Hashem. And then there's the good of the Nefesh Elikis. The good of the Nefesh Elikis is where Hashem is evident, where a person does something good and he's doing it. Why? Because the Eibishter told me to do that. That's the good of the Nefesh Elikis. Because the Eibishter told me to do that, because I want to have a relationship with Hashem, and that's the highest level of good possible. That's the good of the Nefesh Elikis. Yeah?
No, just a quick question. If a goy keeps the Shulman's minute off because he feels that God commanded a goy to keep down, would that constitute Nefesh Elikis for a goy? So to speak?
A goy, you're asking if a goy does Shavim Mishpnei Noyach. And does it L'Shem Shamayim, which by the way, they have to. If you look in Rambam, the Rambam is very clear, unequivocal about that. That if a goy keeps it, but not because Hashem told him to. So,
it would sound like Nefesh Elikis, but he's doing it to be Mevatel to Hashem. It would sound like it, even if it's not in the category of it.
So you're asking if a goy does Shavim Mishpnei Noyach, and it's doing it L'Shma, is that from, does that goy have an Nefesh Elikis? The answer is no.
But the Rambam does say he has a portion of the world to come.
Absolutely. The Rambam says that he has a portion of the world to come. Chassidim and Mesoilim have a portion of the world to come. 100%.
If they do it for that group.
If they do the Shavim Mishpnei Noyach, and they do it with proper intentions. But that's not an Nefesh Elikis. You know, we're complex creatures. The human being is a complex creature. And the ability for complete bittul is only by a yid. A goy can have a degree of bittul perhaps, but there's always that yeshus, the selfishness mixed in, because the goy is incapable of escaping that. And that's not a flaw in the goy. Hashem created certain klipas, and that klipa it's stuck in what it is. So it's not looking down at the goy, it's not putting down the goy. But that level of bittul, which a yid is capable of achieving, a goy cannot achieve, because a goy does not have an nefesh elikis. But a goy, you know, just when we say in Pirkei Avos, chaviv adam shenivra b'tzelem, which means that precious is the human being because it was created in the image of Hashem. So the mefarshim there are very clear, the tesis yomtiv, etc. That's a yidin and goyim together. The later clause in the Mishnah says chaviv yisrael shenikru banim lamakim. And there it says Yidden. Yidden are only called Banim Lamakim. Why are only Yidden called Banim Lamakim, children of the Eibishter? That we're going to learn in Perek Beis. There's a reason why only Yidden, you know, we say, we're all children of God. No, Yidden are children of God. B'tzalam Alekim, created in Hashem's image, every single person. V'racham of Kol Ma'isav, Hashem's mercy extends to all His creations, definitely includes Goyim also. But Banim Lashem, that's a reference to the Nefesh Elikis, and that's a Yid only. So it's not about putting down Goyim, they're created by Salam Alekim, they're in God's image, and they can do the Shevim Shnei Noyach, and they can get rewarded for it. And the Gemara says that a Goy who learns the Shevim Shnei Noyach properly can be greater than a Kohen Gadol. The Gemara says.
How is that possible?
They're stating the Gemara. I believe it's Gemara and Yuma. I have to find it if you will offend.
How is it possible?
Because a Goy can reach great spiritual heights, but this ultimate bittul. Which, what do you mean?
Well, but if a Jewish person has this part of the
neshama,
the Elikis, how can it be greater than
the Elikis? You're asking if only a Yid has a Nefesh Elikis and a Goy doesn't, then by definition the Yid is always greater than the Goy.
He certainly always has the potential of being greater.
Certainly always has the potential, correct. I think that's a very good point. But if he doesn't work on that, doesn't actualize it, I understand. What does that mean, greater? There, meaning that if a Yid doesn't do what he's supposed to do, or doesn't reach his full potential, and a Goy does do what he's supposed to do and reaches his full potential, then the Goy will go straight to Gan Eden, and the Yid won't go straight to Gan Eden. I mean, there's fairness also in the world. But let's not get sidetracked by that. My point was that if you look in the Chazal, you find many, many references to a guy who does what he's supposed to do. It's a wonderful thing and can be a very great Baal Madriga. You know, Noach wasn't a Yid. Avram wasn't, you know, that was his advantage over him. You know, and Abir is saying this again. This gives us an incredible understanding of what Tanya is all about. Because it really, really raises the bar. When we're saying, now that we've defined the Nefesh al-Kis and the Nefesh al-Mahamas, and we realize that's the battle that's going on within us. So we realize the battle isn't only between good and evil. Why? Because the Nefesh al-Mahamas is also good. So if the battle is only between good and evil, that could be a battle within the Nefesh al-Mahamas. Nefesh al-Mahamas has Midas Tevis. Shabbat Teva Kol Yisrael. Remember we said last week, the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov are both the Nefesh al-Mahamas. Remember we said that last week? Now, by now we understand that. Because the Nefesh al-Mahamas is inclined to do bad and is inclined to do good. That's the Yetzer Tov, Yetzer Hara. Nefesh al-Kis is a new dimension altogether. Nefesh al-Kis is about transparency to Hashem. It's about Bittul. And the challenge of Tanya to us is, are you going to live a life that's self-centered? A life that's about you and expressing you and your desires, even if it's good, even if it's a good life. That's a life of the Nefesh al-Mahamas. Or are you going to live a life of the Nefesh al-Kis, where Hashem is transparent in your life, and you're bittul to Hashem? So the battle between Nefesh al-Kis and Nefesh al-Mahamas is not only about action. Am I going to do a mitzvah? Am I going to do a avera? It's much deeper. It's about who am I? It's an identity. It's an identity question. You know, Yetzer Tov, Yetzer Hara, so my battle is, will I do this? Will I do that? Will I do the good thing? Will I do the bad thing? The battle to the Nefesh al-Kis, Nefesh al-Mahamas is an identity battle which expresses itself in every part of our life. And every time I'm doing something, I could be expressing my Nefesh al-Mahamas. If I'm doing it in a klipa way, in other words, if Hashem isn't evident over there, if it's about me, or because I'm a yid, I have the ability to do it in a Nefesh al-Kis way, which is in a way of bittul. And obviously also, it goes without saying that and this is something you'll be hearing from me many, 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 many times in the weeks and months to come. That whenever we take something to an extreme, we're setting ourselves up to fail for failure. Whenever we, and maybe I've mentioned this already before, that when we look at things as black and white, we're setting ourselves up to fail. Okay, so what's my life going to be? Is my life going to be an expression of myself, or is my life going to be transparent to Hashem? And every act of mine is going to be infused with bittul, subjugation and subservience to Hashem. When you look at it that way, if those are the two options I put before you, then everyone here is going to say, I give up before I begin. So the challenge of Tanya is not, it's about the small steps. It's about, in other words, it's about the struggle and the small steps that we take in life. And that's what Tanya is going to enable us, is to make our life more and more godly. Less and less klipa, more and more godly. One act at a time, one thought at a time. How is it that my life can express my Nefesh al-Kis rather than my Nefesh al-Mahamas? Yes?
Is that the focus of Tanya?
The focus of Tanya is the battle between the Nefesh al-Kis and the Nefesh al-Mahamas. Yes?
Is it only Tanya that addresses that, or is it, are there other?
So Tanya addresses our entire life and all our life's issues in the context of this battle. So although to say that the whole Sefer is about this battle, and this might, you know, might talk to me, this might not talk to me, but as it turns out, this is what the amazing thing is going to be about Tanya. You're going to realize that every issue that you have in life is related to this battle. And if you resolve this battle, everything can be resolved. That's the amazing thing about Tanya. Yes, it's all in the context of Nefesh al-Kis, Nefesh al-Mahamas, but what we're going to find out is that this battle is all-consuming, and whatever you're looking for, whether it's happiness, and whether it's happiness, I mean Pashat Simcha, as opposed to depression, whether you're having issues in your Avodas Hashem, and you want to serve Hashem more, whether it's issues in how to do mitzvahs averus, understanding the dynamics of this battle between the Nefesh al-Kis and the Nefesh al-Mahamas, And understanding how the Nefesh HaLakis can be victorious over the Nefesh HaMahamis will be the key to everything in our life. Because ultimately, it's easy to say, what do I need the Nefesh HaLakis for? My Nefesh HaMahamis also has good in it. I'm fine with that good of the Nefesh HaMahamis. But what's the result of that? What's the result of letting the Nefesh HaMahamis dominate? That, I mean, there could be many answers to this question, but just...
In other words, you could be learning, like, Torah, and you're doing it for yourself, and not because of shackles.
You could be learning Torah, and you could be doing it for yourself, and in that case, the Torah is in Klipa. Alter Rebbe says it very clear, brought down in Kabbalah. There's a... The Pasuk, Kiseitze la melchama aleivecha, you go out to battle against your enemy, the enemy is the Nefesh HaMahamis. Vishavisa shivyoi, and you take back... You capture its captives. What do you mean? You capture the captives that it captured. So what is explaining this in Chassidus? That means the Nefesh HaMahamis captures sometimes Torah. When a person learns Torah, and it's all about self, that Torah goes down to Klipa. What does that mean? It goes down to Klipa. Very simple. Is Hashem expressed in that Torah, or is ego expressed in that Torah? If you're learning Torah because you want to be honored and you want to, then it's all about you. It's not about Hashem. So that's Klipa. That's the definition of Klipa. Here you took something which is intrinsic. This is mind-blowing. You took something which is intrinsically holy, something which actually expresses Hashem, and you managed to make it about your ego. Yeah. So...
I'm just so curious. I have this question. I know Lubav Trevor also, I heard him say, I quote him, he said, he who learns Torah for selfish reasons becomes like a bomb. I mean, disruptive.
But becomes like?
I heard him say over, becomes like a bomb. He says if somebody learns Torah for selfish reasons,
right,
becomes like a bomb. That's what he said.
No, he didn't.
I heard a video of him saying that. But it's interesting, when I went to the Ohel of the Rebbe last year, they had him totally saying that. I heard him say that they had a plan to say that. I didn't hear him alive say that, but
it was okay.
A video saying that. But I guess what he probably meant was, if a bomb is destructive, I guess, if a person, he probably meant that somebody is learning the content.
If
there's a fine line between...
If you after class, come to me. I want to show you what it says in Tanya about that. And it's very clear in Tanya. That lo ilam yasek adam v'teira shalei l'shma shma teik l'shma ba l'shma.
That's my question, but maybe he meant the Rebbe, if somebody is learning more...
No. He says l'shum p'niya. He's saying l'kanter maybe.
Means to embarrass.
Okay, this is a little off. This is going to be the subject of Tanya. The end of Paraglama test talks about this topic.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he's very clear over there that even when you learn Torah, you learn, goes into Klipa,
yeah,
you should still learn.
Right, that's what I was going
to. Because you know why? Because it's still Torah. And when you do Tshuva, you're going to pull it out of the Klipa. And you will do Tshuva. Everyone does Tshuva. But this is a little going off. Everyone, Begilgul Zay, Begilgul Acher. Whether in this Gilgul or another Gilgul, there's the divine plan. You can't mess it up. You can delay it. You can't mess it up.
Everybody does
tshuva.
It's reassuring.
So,
thank you.
The problem is if we stay with the Nefesh HaMahamis, and I say my Nefesh HaMahamis has good, yeah, but the Nefesh HaMahamis also has bad. So where are you going to draw the divide? A life lived by the Nefesh HaMahamis is not an effective life. It doesn't work.
Why?
Because it's a life which is about me expressing my natural self, and there are good components to my natural self, but there are bad components.
You focus on the good and you stay away from the bad.
That's not possible. If your life is devoted to your natural self, then you're not going to be able to make that division. But that's not in other words, we will come to see in Tanya how all the issues and the problems comes from the Nefesh HaMahamis. And
there are people probably who outwardly they are very positive and do a lot of good things, and they don't do that many bad things. They do mainly good things, but again, they haven't reached the higher level.
But let's leave that aside. As you'll come to see, everyone in life has issues. Every issue he has comes from Nefesh HaMahamis. That's what we're going to find out. And we're also going to figure out what to do about it and how to handle it. It's going to be a very, very enlightening journey. But it lifts. To be a Yid is different than to be a Goy. Because to be a Goy, what are you expected of? What's expected of a Goy? To be a good person. And when a Goy is a good person, And Sheva, that's what Sheva Mishpnei Noach is be a good, civilized person. That guy has reached his maximum, done his mission 100%. He gets rewarded for it, as the Eibishter gives rewards. But to be a Yid, the bar is higher. The bar is higher means you have a Nefesh HaLakis. Nefesh HaLakis means it's not enough to be good, you have to be godly. We have to be transparent to the Eibishter and the conduits of HaLakus in the world. Ourselves being conduits of the Eibishter, and also within the world, revealing Eibishter within everything. And that's why we have 613 mitzvahs. It's not only a quantitative difference. The 613 is because we have a different role. And that is a role of not being good, of being godly. And that is where the Nefesh HaLakis comes in. Because that our ability to be godly comes from the Nefesh HaLakis, the fact that we have that within us, as we'll start Mitzvah Shem with Perek Beis next week.